This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy, 94.9.
It's Monday, the 22nd of May. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation. SMS 0427 Joy 949, email onair at joy.org.au, or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy. Welcome to The Informer. On tonight's show, we're going to take a look at the crisis facing gay men in Chechnya. We'll be chatting to the Russian LGBT network about what we can do here in Australia to help. We have a couple of huge breaking news stories as well. Later on in the show, we'll be talking about the arrest of 141 men at a gay sauna in Indonesia. The Human Rights Watch will be talking to us also ahead of tomorrow's caning of two gay men in Aceh. But first to some breaking news here in Melbourne, and what a way to bring back The Informer. I'm joined by Dean Beck in the studio about some interesting, I guess, developments in the HIV sector. What can you tell us, Dean?
Very concerning developments, actually. Melbourne will go down in HIV history books as the fourth ever case of PrEP failure. Melbourne is currently under a PrEP X trial. There are some 800, I think it is, participants that are currently a part of the Melbourne trial. That's last week was expanded into South Australia. We know that in the previous failures of PrEP, two of those cases resulted in drug-resistant strains.
Sure.
And one of them was a non-drug-resistant strain. We're not quite sure why, but we think that was due to the number of sexual encounters that were engaged in, according to some of the reports on that third one. In this case, we're not sure exactly what has happened because in the previous three cases, the announcement was kept within the study confines, and until the researchers have worked out exactly what happened, they reported only then about the failure. In this case, because of the PrEPEX study being a real-world scenario where it's in your local GP and your local pharmacies where you get your medication, this real-world scenario has been hailed as the way to go to do this study, yet it's this real-world scenario that has unfortunately come undone because it is the GP who has started telling other patients about the failure and without getting to the actual reason why.
Okay, I want to address that in a second, but what could some of the reasons be other than, you know, a drug-resistant strain that could have caused this to happen?
Well, to date, the only other real explanation is non-adherence.
Mm-hmm. So, not taking your PrEP every day.
Correct, yes. And we know that, theoretically, we believe that if you take at least four pills a week, that you will be protected after your 28-day
sure.
Warm-up period, if you like. But all bets are off at present until we get to the root cause of this particular PrEP failure.
So with the PrEP failure, I guess it's really important to know what caused it before we can ring the alarm bells. But should we be worried at all?
Well, we do know that hundreds of thousands of sexual encounters have been taking place
sure.
whilst taking the combination of drugs that is PrEP. And to date, this seems like the fourth case of it not working for somebody. So it's pretty rare that it would fail. Never has anyone said it's 100% protective, but we do know that it tends to be greater than condoms in its protection.
Mm-hmm.
And with hundreds of thousands of sexual encounters taking place and this potentially being the fourth case,
sure.
which will break, I might add, in tomorrow's Age. Well, it's broken here, hasn't it? But Fairfax newspapers will be reporting it tomorrow. They have spoken to Professor Sharon Lewin about the science around this.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the HIV sector has been working feverishly to do damage control prior to this announcement here on Joy on The Informer. What we know is that the Alfred has been pretty quiet in this space.
Sure.
It's their study and their ethics committee that has approved this study. And there'll be questions asked as to how this was allowed out, why the GP said what the GP said to other patients, because it's that started this social media buzz. And, yeah, we have got the fourth case of PrEP failure in this country.
Yeah, in the world. Which seems like pretty good stats considering, you know, how many people around the world are on PrEP. What are the implications? I guess the HIV sector and the Alfred, when it comes to, when this sort of news happens, they probably don't want a GP telling their patients. They probably want to control the message so there isn't widespread panic.
Well, they want to know what the root cause is first, and they want to know why. And that's why in the other three cases, it's remained within the study confines until the announcement.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, this real-world scenario, which is the PrEPX trial, meant that that wasn't the case.
Mm.
We have seen dramatic evidence of a reduction in new HIV infections in countries that have regions that have embraced PrEP, and that's playing out in the UK, huge in the USA, San Francisco particularly, which was sort of where it all in our MSM communities all sort of started. And we expect that to start to play out here locally as well, there'll be less new infections here in Australia very soon.
Well, fantastic. But I think the important message to get out there is that, yes, this news sort of broke on social media. We've had it confirmed. There's no need for panic. There's no need to get alarmed until we know exactly what's going on.
It was confirmed. I can't say who confirmed it, but I can say that I know my source works within the HIV sector, and I can stand by the claims, and it'll be in The Age tomorrow.
Fantastic. And all right, Dean Beck, thank you so much for breaking that huge news for us. And coming up on The Informer, we have lots more news for you. This is The Informer on Joy 94.9, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. So last week, about 800 people packed into Melbourne's Federation Square to show their support for gay and bisexual men in Chechnya. Since December last year, the Chechen government has been rounding up gay men. Gay men are being persecuted, detained, tortured, and in some cases murdered. An explosive investigative report in Russia's Novaya Gazeta newspaper alerted the world to the atrocities in March. So the Chechen Republic is a federal subject of Russia located in the Northern Caucasus. Its president, Ramzan Kadyrov, has vowed to rid Chechnya of all gay men, either by exile or death, by the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan. Now, this year's Ramadan starts this Friday, the 26th of May. Melbourne's community rallied at Federation Square to hear how they could support their Chechen brothers overseas. So I spoke to one of the leading organisations helping men to escape from Chechnya. And so here is a spokesperson from the Russian LGBTI network. We can't name them for security purposes, but they've given us the lowdown on what is happening in Chechnya and what we can do here in Australia to help them. So tell me about the Russian LGBT network. What are your objectives? What sort of work do you do for the community?
We're an LGBT organization working in Russia. We're based in St. Petersburg. We also have around 16 regional affiliations around Russia. And what we do is work with the LGBT community in Russia, where we offer different services. We offer psychological health, every other help that there can be offered for the community, like legal assistance in some ways. We do a lot for activists, for the LGBT community in general. We're trying to be out there to help people as much as we can.
Obviously, there's a lot of attention is on Chechnya at the moment and with what is going on there. Can you tell us a little bit about your understanding of what's happening to gay and bisexual men in Chechnya?
We found out about the situation in mid-March. And so our director started receiving anonymous messages about the fact that gay people, gay men in Chechnya are being persecuted and tortured and detained and are maybe even killed. And when I started to kind of check what, like, if that's the real, you know, the real thing that's going on in the region, because as a matter of fact, we never worked in Chechnya before. We never worked in the North Caucasus before. And so while we're trying to check with other NGOs who actually are involved in, you know, in working with the region, we have set up the hotline for, you know, for people to, you know, to call us and ask for help. And so we set it up around, like, in late March, and then on the 1st of April, the Nova Gazette article was published, kind of confirming what we already found out. Since then, we've been rescuing, evacuating people from the region. We are a little bit more than 80 people by now are applied for help through the hotline, and we rescued 43 people from the region. From what they tell us, we know that these are persecution and detainments, and torture started. The first wave started around December 2016, the beginning of January 2017, and then a second wave started in around, you know, March, April 2017.
Have you been able to gain any insight as to why this has started recently?
I mean, I can't really answer this question to you because we're still kind of in between information. Like, has this been going on for, you know, for a long time? Has just started? There are rumors that, you know, there is Kadyrov of talking about, you know, Ramadan and this, the gay men should be out of Chechnya by the start of the holy month of Ramadan. But it's still in the air. We're still not sure why this is going on. And to be fair, this is not our goal, to find out why this is going on. Our goal is to get those people out and make sure they are alive and safe and not being tortured and not being detained and not being murdered.
Are you able to give me any insight as to actually how you're managing to help people get out?
So when we receive the requests, we are trying to get people. So the first stage is we're trying to get people out of Chechnya to different locations in Russia because they're in the, you know, in the immediate danger. And so we're taking them out. We are offering them housing in different parts of Russia because, you know, like for security reasons, we're not allowed to disclose those places. So we're giving them housing. We are offering them with medical assistance because a lot of them need medical assistance, especially those who went through our detainment and tortures. And we definitely offer them psychological help because, you know, it's a complicated process and very stressful. And so all of that, we cover all the basic needs for those people because some of them just fled our Chechnya without any, you know, without any anything, you know, just like with their passports or with a small backpack, and they don't have anything. They have to start a new life. So, and our, like, the ultimate goal is to get all of them out of Russia. So now we are, as you probably heard, in negotiations with different countries if they will be able to accept those refugees. We are very happy that we were able to evacuate 9 people already abroad, so they are no longer in Russia, and we're very happy about that. But we still have, you know, around, you know, more than 30 people who are now waiting for their visas to be approved and to get out of Russia. That's a lot of people and a lot of help in negotiating these issues with the government.
Right. Can you give us any idea which countries are you're talking with and which countries might be approving visas?
We are trying not to disclose this information also due to security reasons. You probably heard that the Prime Minister of Lithuania published a statement that they accepted 2 gay men from Chechnya, and we're trying not to do that because, you know, it's a small country and they're easily to identify. So what I can tell you is that we're negotiating with 5 countries right now. 3 countries are EU countries, 2 countries are not EU countries.
I imagine working for an LGBT network in Russia, you face a lot of challenges every day. But when your staff members and volunteers and people that work with you heard about what was going on in Chechnya, what was the reaction like?
We are all extremely worried about what's happening in Chechnya. And I think that, you know, all of our staff and a lot of other different organizations and human rights NGOs and LGBT NGOs around Russia were willing to help us. Part of why our Russian officials started talking on this matter and started acknowledging that something is going on in Chechnya is because there has been such a great response, you know, to this crisis from within Russia and from, you know, from the countries around the world.
You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. We're chatting with the spokesperson from the Russian LGBT network who are working tirelessly to help gay men escape from Chechnya where they face persecution. You said that you've not worked in the North Caucasus before. What are some challenges that you've faced having to adapt your work to a new region that you haven't worked in before?
Also, I don't think there was such a crisis before because we considered this not only the massive humanitarian crisis in the region, but also as a crime against humanity. And we never faced that before, so that was the main challenge, like, to develop everything from, you know, from the beginning. So we adopted security protocols, we did, you know, all of that work, and the most challenging thing, there are a lot of challenges, but the most challenging is to actually, you know, make people trust you and, you know, that, you know, we are actually able to help people. And we kind of saw how this trust developed over, you know, since we started the hotline, you know, and more people applying for help. And we see that people actually starting to trust us and to actually acknowledge that they can be helped and there are people who are willing to help them. And that's a big thing to have.
I think it's amazing that in such a short space of time you've been able to make such a big difference and help in the way that you can. We're in Australia, we're on the other side of the world, but we do want to contribute and help and make sure that these men are safe. What do you think people in Australia and listening to this show can do to make sure that the men in Chechnya can get out and can, you know, get to safety?
I mean, we're extremely grateful for, you know, for your willingness to help. There are two things that we think that people, you know, the international community can do. The first is to keep this issue, this humanitarian crisis, this crime against humanity in the media spotlight. And we're grateful to be on, you know, in your show. Because this actually, you know, this won't allow Russian government to, you know, to kind of avoid the investigation. And what is needed right now is a fair and transparent investigation of this crime. And, you know, the more we pay attention and to this crisis, the more, you know, the more the Russian authorities will be pressured to actually, you know, to help the people responsible for this accountable. And the other thing are the visas, obviously. So some of the governments already, you know, stepped forward and offered to provide visas for the Chechen refugees, but we need to displace our, you know, 40 people right now. And we will probably need more support from the international community. So, you know, if Australian government can help in that, we will be extremely grateful. And if you can, you know, call your government to support and to, you know, step forward and to provide some visas for people to flee Russia, to flee this the terror they faced, this would be amazing thing.
Okay, so to recap, if, you know, for people listening, I guess they can share articles on social media and they can retweet articles to step up that, I guess, exposure of what's happening to put pressure on the Russian government, but also we can contact our local politicians to convince them to accept refugees. I imagine this kind of an operation, negotiating with governments, trying to provide, you know, psychological support and material support to these men is a costly exercise. Would donations from the foreign community to your organisation help with your efforts to help these men?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've been also offered a lot of financial support from different NGOs all over the world. And we're recently on our website, LGBTNet.org, we published a statement saying which organizations donated us money and, you know, stating the sum that we received from private donations. And I'll just say that we're very grateful for this. But yes, I mean, it's a costly matter, obviously. You know, people, we have to, you know, we have to provide people with basically new life. So donations absolutely help. And there is a donation button on our website that, you know, people can use and people can donate money for the cause. The issue is a, you know, is a more kind of more at stakes right now. It's, you know, it's a matter of, it's always a matter of, you know, how to bring people out of the country.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to The Informer on Joy. That was a spokesperson for the Russian LGBT network. And now to some more breaking news out of Indonesia. The world was shocked last week when two men aged in their early 20s were sentenced to a horrific punishment of 85 lashings with a cane. The men were convicted of sodomy in Indonesia's Aceh province. The province has special bylaws which adhere to strict Islamic Sharia laws. But just last night, in the country's capital, Jakarta, 141 men were detained at what was allegedly a gay party. Joining us on the phone from Jakarta is Andreas Halsono from Human Rights Watch.
Andreas, tell us, last night 141 men were arrested. Why were they arrested? What's the story? You were down there today checking it out.
They were having a gathering. Those regular customer and also irregular customer in a fitness center / spa / sauna for gay men. It is located inside a shop house pretty far from Jakarta, from central Jakarta, in a shopping area in northern Jakarta. The area is pretty quiet, actually, inside a Navy complex. But it is a shopping area. The police raided them about 7 p.m., 7:30, 8 p.m. I saw many motorcycles are still police line protected in the compound. And I saw the two shop houses combined into a single one were also sealed by the police. Of course, there are many police officers and Navy police officers guarding the area. They are now still at the North Jakarta police precinct. They are divided into two groups. One is customer, and the other one is the operator. Operators, owners, managers, cashier of the fitness club. They are still under questioning.
So has anybody been arrested yet?
They are still under questioning. We still do not know. Under Indonesian law, the police has the rights to detain someone, to investigate, to question up to 3 times 24 hours. Although the police already issued the article, but they are not officially charged yet. It is an article about pornography, about filming pornographic material. And then the other one is maybe the customer for indecent act.
So you went down to the scene today. Why did you go down?
Oh, that's my job.
But what sort of role, I guess, would Human Rights Watch have?
I'm working at Human Rights Watch as a researcher. So I usually investigate, research human rights abuses, whether they are against LGBT minorities, women's minorities, religious minorities. And, of course, I write. That's why if things like this, I usually try to understand the situation firsthand. Of course, I went to the scene because a fair scene is very important for our investigation at Human Rights Watch. I took a lot of photos, a film, and then I will analyze all those things. Plus, of course, legal evidence, legal document from the police.
So what happens moving forward? Do you help with the legal defense of these men?
Usually, I only write. I write a statement. I work with my friends at Human Rights Watch. They are scared all around the world, in Sydney, New York, Tokyo, New Delhi, Bangkok. And then we are going to have a position on such an issue. I will we will take a look at the article that the police is using. And after that, we are going to, you know, to talk, to do advocacy, talk to the media. That's what we should really do. We don't do, quote-unquote, humanitarian assistance, such as visiting person in detention center or political prisoner or LGBT people in distress. Although informally, you know, you cannot avoid that. Sometimes I have to help people in distress.
Is it fair to say that LGBTI people in Indonesia have been facing more persecution recently?
We have seen the rise of discrimination and persecution against LGBT people for over than 10 years now, although it kind of overshadowed by discrimination against religious minorities and women's rights. Why? Obviously, religious minorities and women's are bigger groups than LGBT in Indonesia. But, you know, after the discrimination, the persecutions of those two groups have already more or less controlled by people who are the perpetrators, now they are targeting LGBT, and we are seeing more and more of them over the last 2 years. You know, gay men, lesbian, LGBT, transgender being arrested, being caned in Aceh, being charged in Surabaya. We are seeing more and more over the last 2 years. Although this is not new because the pornography law was passed more than 10 years ago.
Thanks very much to Andreas Harsono from the Human Rights Watch. You have been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. That's it for our first episode back after a short break. I'd like to thank tonight's guests, the Russian LGBTI Network and Andreas Harsono from Human Rights Watch, for speaking with us. I'd also like to thank our extended Informer team, including our panelist Hamish Blank, putting together tonight's show. And also thanks to Dean Beck and Ian Muchmore for working very hard on bringing that HIV exclusive at the top of the show, which was that Melbourne has recorded one of only the fourth HIV infections while someone's been taking PrEP.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.